All right, everybody, get out your pad of paper, your pen, your pencil, your crayon. You're going to want to take notes. I really hooked a big fish here, and he's from Florida, so he's close to the ocean and the intercoastal. William Falloon, most people know him as Bill Falloon. Bill has an amazing many-decade career, but he is literally one of the world's experts on longevity and anti-aging cutting stuff. So we've talked about exercise and broccoli and sleep and sauna and all kinds of amazing technologies. But we're going to talk now about what the future might hold to reverse your heart disease with the most advanced of technologies. And you're going to love this episode. I'm going to love this episode. But since I do like to formally give people the proper introduction, Bill Falloon, along with Saul Kent, founded Life Extension in 1980 or even in the late 70s to be a newsletter on health and longevity. And people started asking about the vitamins they mentioned. So now it is an educational program and a massive vitamin company. He serves as technical director, and his mission is age reversal research initiatives. Hundreds of media appearances. He's been on the Phil Donahue Show. You got to love that. He's been on ABC News. He's been on many, many avenues of media. And he's the author of books, including one that I've read recently, Pharmacracy, How Corrupt Deals and Misguided Medical Regulations Are Bankrupting America and What to Do About It. Make sure you know about lifeextension.com. It's one of the most interesting websites. I've had the pleasure to contribute articles, and I ingest many of their products every day. Welcome, Bill.
Thank you so much for having me on. I hope we can have a fantastic conversation because there's a lot of information to disseminate.
Yeah, it's going to be fantastic, and people are going to really understand the future is so bright. I mean, I'm not the first to say, if you're interested in longevity, there's never been a better time to be alive than right now and the next decade and on and on. So you've had this long interest. We're talking about reversing heart disease naturally. And, you know, we're not going to focus with you on diet and fitness. I know you're a big believer in all of them, and your magazine, your journal comes out with great articles about lifestyle all the time. Again, I'm proud to say I've been featured in your magazine before. But let's talk about the tough cases. I'm going to just throw one at you. Cardiology. I've got a cholesterol of 800. I inherited from my parents familial hyperlipidemia. I've got the ability to make too much of a protein called PCSK9, and I need to find a way to correct my liver from putting me at risk of dying very young in life. Of course, this is all a hypothetical. I don't have that condition, which we used to say was about one in a million, but we think it's actually more frequent now. Yeah. And you can be a 12-year-old and have a heart attack from what I just described. So talk to us about something you're an expert on, CRISPR technology, gene editing. I've got this bad gene and I want to get rid of it. Tell us what about the technology and what might hold the future, so I don't have to depend on medicines to control my cholesterol or even cholesterol dialysis called apheresis. What do you got for us?
Well, in the future, CRISPR gene editing will enable us to go in and literally knock out the PCSK9 enzyme that's going to create all of that excess cholesterol and keep it from breaking down. The approved drugs out there, Repatha, the PCSK9 inhibitors, we're proponents of those for people who are otherwise unable to lower their LDL and total cholesterol levels. And I have to say, we've been doing this now for about 45 consecutive years. We've had people give us all kinds of recommendations as far as diet and supplements and exercise. But the problem is atherosclerosis is a natural progressive process. And if you've got known risk factors, you need to target them, even with therapies you'd rather avoid. Now, once CRISPR becomes available, we'll be able to edit our genes so that our levels of all of the dangerous atherogenic risk factors, they'll be brought into optimal ranges, and we won't be faced with this epidemic. But we have to face reality today, and what we have today are our medications for people who are otherwise unable to control the level of anyone of 17 to 20 independent risk factors, they shouldn't put themselves on the medication. Ask their doctor to look at that medication, look at their blood test result, and get that optimized.
Well, that's about as exciting as can be. In fact, you're making me think for a minute that in my medical clinic, I have a poster of an artery with multiple daggers that represent different risk factors for atherosclerosis. And obviously, I lifted that right out of your magazine probably a good decade ago. And actually, I've written on the outside additional ones that have come along, like TMAO and 9P21. You and I should work together and update that and make it even more of an ominous and scary picture. But let's circle back, because the average person listening doesn't know much about CRISPR. And I mean, how are we going to get to the liver and tell individual liver cells that inherited this ability to make way too much of a protein, so your cholesterol goes to insane levels? Or maybe you only have one parent. That's called heterozygous familial hyperlipidemia. So your cholesterol is only 350, not 850 or 1,000. How are we going to convince those liver cells? How are we going to cut out that gene? I mean, how much can you tell us about CRISPR technology?
Well, what they're doing now is they're taking essentially inactivated viruses that literally enter the cell, and they will replace DNA base pairs in a way that the genes that are causing you problems, they are edited out, and then better genes sometimes can be edited in. And it's been done in a way that has dramatically slowed aging in the animal model, live mice, in which aging is dramatically slowed. And as it relates to particular medical issues, once CRISPR is perfected, that will be the way medicine is practiced. They won't rely on pharmaceuticals anymore. You won't even need vitamins, from what we understand. The cells will be programmed to produce the vitamins that they need, as opposed to you having to swallow 40, 50 pills a day, which is what I'm doing. So I'm looking forward to CRISPR putting us out of the vitamin business and enabling people to essentially be edited to be in a state of optimal health.
You're only taking 40 to 50 vitamins a day, you slacker.
Well, I can't. Well, there, some of them are multi, so I'm getting at least 100 different nutrients a day. And I take a lot of medications. I do have issues with lipids, homocysteine. And so I do anything that can get my blood test in optimal ranges. And for the first time over the last 2-3 years, I've achieved the blood test results typically seen in a healthy 21-year-old. It's taken my entire life to put together a program to do that.
Wow.
And for people who don't do it, unfortunately, they do suffer angina. They do suffer coronary artery occlusion. So,
yeah. And I'll say you've written some amazing articles about your own health, your own lab values, your own vitamin and lifestyle support at lifeextension.com. And people can go look up Bill Falloon. It's 1L2Os, right? F-A-L-O-O-N.
That's correct. That's correct. Okay.
I have in the past made the mistake of having 2 L's there. So this CRISPR technology to theoretically, actually it's more than theoretically, to imminently be able to shut off genes that are overproducing compounds like PCSK9 enzyme that can cause early heart attacks, early stroke, early death, or inserting a gene that you're missing. Many people are lacking a gene. Right. So that, for example, the MTHFR methylation 677 gene, maybe you want the normal version, although it's not usually a lethal condition or an imminently lethal condition. So I believe there's a trial just launched in Australia. Again, we often have to take this research overseas, and we'll have listeners from Australia, and at least one human has had their CRISPR technology. And I think the focus was severe cholesterol disorders. Is life extension involved in any research that could theoretically be gene editing or supporting it because you do have a foundation?
What we do, we're promoting the research. We're encouraging the research. Research we're directly funding involves Yamanaka factors. That's a bridge before CRISPR is perfected. And that study in Australia is fascinating. What's fascinating about it is they showed CRISPR worked in the monkey model. And they were able to then transition that research into a human clinical trial within a 13-month period of time. So the pace at which they're able to demonstrate efficacy in a primate and then move that into a human is virtually unprecedented. That's what really excites us, how fast developments are occurring.
Now, you just spilled the beans on my next focus to ask you about, and you threw out a very interesting term, Yamanaka factor, and I want to ask you about that, and I want to set the stage again. Now I'm a different patient. I've had a heart attack, and my anterior wall of my left ventricle is full of scar tissue and fibroblasts. But I want muscle tissue. I don't want scar tissue. And the heart doesn't regenerate like a liver or like a chameleon's tail. The heart is very limited in any regenerative capacity. So tell us a little what those fibroblasts, those scar cells that are surrounding my heart attack zone, how they might be able to be teased back into developing as heart muscle cells and make my heart strong again. Everybody who's had a heart attack ought to listen right now.
Yeah, they should, because step number one is to remove the senescent cells that make up that fibrotic tissue. Those cells are spewing out pro-inflammatory factors. They're emitting protein-degrading enzymes. They will interfere with any regenerative attempt that you put into that patient, including using taurine, carnitine, CoQ10, magnesium. All kind of good nutrients can be thwarted because you've got these senescent cells that are obstructing any type of regenerative capacity that you're seeking to optimally encourage. So the good news is there are compounds known as senolytics that selectively remove senescent cells. And I put on presentations showing that if you fail to remove the senescent cells from the damaged heart muscle wall, you can't get the repair process going because you've got more and more damage occurring as you're trying to build up the strength of that natural heart muscle tissue again. So the combination of dasatinib, quercetin, fisetin, these senolytic compounds should be a primary step, and then start to initiate some of the more elaborate regenerative approaches.
Right. And of course, Dr. Kirkland at the Mayo Clinic doing actual human research to lower or remove these aging senile, we call them senescent cells, using a pharmaceutical combination you mentioned, dasatinib and quercetin. These are ongoing human trials in lung disease in this case. Well, you know, they're going to extend over to my field, heart disease. Your fine company makes a vitamin called senolytic activator. It's a vitamin, so you don't need a prescription. And people take it once a week if they do their research and want to add this to the program. It is a vitamin I added to my program. But let's go back to that term Yamanaka factors. Dr. Yamanaka won the Nobel Prize in 2012. By describing four factors that could take this scar cell, this fibroblast, and what can it turn it into, at least in the petri dish, hopefully one day in the human. What can we do to that scar cell?
It can actually regenerate it back into the embryonic states, into an induced pluripotent stem cell. And the virtue of the Yamanaka factors is they're available off the shelf. They can be purchased by researchers, not to put into your body, but to be put into, let's say, peripheral blood mononuclear cells that you remove. This is research we're funding right now to essentially take our autologous cells that are old, rejuvenate them back down to a youthful state, multiply those, and again, adding Yamanaka factors in to keep them growing younger, and then reinfuse those into a patient who needs to have systemic regeneration, because if they've got a damaged heart and they're elderly, they've got other problems too. So the idea is to induce systemic regeneration, including that damaged heart, which is their primary concern.
Yes, and I believe this has gone all the way, and please correct me if I'm wrong, that there actually are some human, maybe one human condition, I think it's an eye condition, where there have been the inducement of these pluripotent stem cells that then can go on to become healthy young eye cells to restore a damaged eye. Correct me if I'm wrong about that, that there is some research in humans.
David Sinclair at Harvard proved that last year, that he was able to use Yamanaka factors to essentially reverse glaucoma and do that in such a way that mice that were blind, they were able to restore some visual field. And he was able to show a regeneration of the optic nerve. So that was a major advance published in a couple of journals and got some media coverage. But so often people read about something and they forget about it. But yeah. We don't. We remind people like you're doing right now.
Right. So I did, jump ahead a little bit that wasn't a human study. You corrected me. It was a mouse study. But, you know, so again, for those heart attack survivors who are told your heart is weakened and you need medication and you need a defibrillator and maybe, you know, you might even be a transplant candidate, we can look forward to at least the hope that we may be able to take cells out of our body, induce them back to a more immature state that then can be induced to become new heart cells. Isn't that amazing?
That's what's being done. They can either do it as induced pluripotent stem cells that can differentiate and diversify any cell, or focus on progenitors' cardiac cells to give the patient a big dose of cells that go right to the heart and regenerate that heart muscle. But again, the senolytics, very important. Reduce the senescent cell burden, put in the rejuvenating factors, and you may get some nice results. Now, bear in mind, we've been advocating high-dose coenzyme Q10 and magnesium taurine that for many, many decades. And a funny little anecdote, a medical doctor, friendly medical doctor, he says, "What are you doing to my patient?" And I said, "Oh, no, did something happen?" He said, "No, I told him he was going to be dead 3 years ago, and he keeps coming into my office." Now, eventually, he did die of congestive heart failure, but we kept him going many more years beyond what the prognosis was. And it was because he was following the entire nutritional protocol. He was following what we suggested and others and got some nice results. So we're able to do a lot today to give people extra time. But we're looking to give them a lot more time.
Yeah, I think every serious patient in my clinic has been taking CoQ10 for, you know, well over a decade. But you guys really set the standard, because I do believe lifeextension.com was the first to recommend CoQ10 is basically, you know, and a vitamin you can buy from Life Extension and many other manufacturers, but is basically a critical component of a heart support program. What, 30 years ago you recommended this?
Yeah, back in 1983, we published an article in our newsletter, Anti-Aging News, about the benefits of CoQ10 for the heart, the brain, the kidney. It's systemically beneficial. And then people were having a challenging time finding it. A couple of companies were offering it, but they weren't easy to find. There was no internet back then. So we started offering it, along with right now, hundreds of companies offer it. Now, the key, though, if someone has congestive heart failure, is they need to initially take some very high doses, 400 to 600 milligrams a day for at least 2 months, build up their serum CoQ10 levels. We'd like to see them, if they have heart disease, well above six to seven, that range where a normal person is okay with 2 or 3. But to regenerate the heart muscle, very high levels. And then once they achieve those levels, they can usually back down. CoQ10 is fat soluble, stays in the body for a while. But for some people, they take 100 milligrams a day and they need a lot more because of their underlying condition.
Yeah, I completely agree as a clinician that uses between 400 and 600 milligrams routinely. Good. And as you mentioned, Quest, LabCorp, these large phlebotomy companies, Life Extension, you can get a blood level of CoQ10. And in a serious condition called congestive heart failure, you should do that. But I doubt 2% of cardiologists in America know that there's a blood test and that you can actually adjust your vitamin program to hit those high numbers, those therapeutic targets. So thank you for bringing that up. You're really a wealth of information. We could spend hours talking. So we've brushed by CRISPR technology, gene editing, gene insertion, gene deletion. We at least gave a little homage to the Nobel Prize winner, Dr. Yamanaka, and the future of pluripotent stem cells. We've talked a little bit about senolytics. Let's talk about anti-aging pharmacologic agents. You're the expert. There's metformin out there, which is a prescription drug easy to get for diabetic issues. There's rapamycin, a drug I've put on stents and put inside heart arteries under the other name sirolimus for years and years. Give us a little rundown on these agents, their potential role for anti-aging and longevity and disease prevention.
Well, one prescription medication, it's rather inexpensive, and it was talked a lot about in the 1980s, 1990s, but it kind of falls off the radar screen, is Deprenil. It's approved to treat Parkinson's disease and doesn't do particularly well in Parkinson's patients, but we think it might help prevent Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, other neurodegenerative conditions. It inhibits an enzyme in the brain called monoamine oxidase B. And as we get older, our levels of MAOB go up, and it then degrades our dopamine. And we have a dopamine deficit. We lose our sense of well-being. We start to feel older. We wonder, where's that youthful zest for life that we used to have? Well, a lot of it is excess MAOB. It can be inhibited with 5 milligrams just twice a week of Deprenil. It doesn't require it to be taken every day. The founder of discoverer of Deprenil, we visited him in Hungary, and he said the problem with Deprenil is people are taking way too much. I designed it as a drug to be taken a few times a week, and people think they need to take a high dose every day. So that's one to add to people's regimen. And again, the generics should be rather inexpensive and prescribed off-label. It could just add another mechanism of thwarting normal aging.
Now, would that candidate be a person with early signs of Parkinson's disease, or that could be a candidate just looking to enhance, potentially, we can't promise, optimal health?
It should be someone over age 45. That's when that MAOB enzyme starts to elevate and degrade dopamine. Under 45, they probably don't need Deprenil. But as they grow older, they start losing more and more dopamine. And at some point, either Parkinson's sets in or just the frailty of aging. You see an older person, and one of the reasons they're so frail, one of many reasons, is dopamine depletion. That could be counteracted with Deprenil, but it should be started earlier in life. But if you're just learning about it now and you're 70, good idea to start it.
Okay, let's shift to metformin, widely available, inexpensive, available for decades. Talk to us a little bit about, you know, your view of it as a prime time or potential future longevity agent.
Well, we recommended metformin as an anti-aging drug in our March 1995 Life Extension magazine. At that point, it was just getting approved by the FDA to treat diabetes. It had been approved in England since 1957. But it took a long time to get approval in this country, regrettably. And we recognized that its mechanisms were beneficial to pre-diabetics, were beneficial to people who might have a non-diabetic related condition. It's a great cancer adjuvant therapy. We think it's a great way to reduce one's risk of contracting cancer. The more we delve into metformin, the better the drug looks. If you can tolerate it from a digestive standpoint, about 15% of the people, they get a digestive upset, diarrhea, they really can't take it. But for those fortunate 85%, they can take it every day and reduce their risk of developing type 2 diabetes and its many complications.
Amazing, amazing. And that would be a conversation between a patient interested in anti-aging longevity and their physician, because they would need a prescription. There is that ongoing randomized study, large study called TAME. We may actually get some data in a few years to fully in a randomized controlled trial. But you think it's on the list now without a large randomized study?
Well, it's on the list in conjunction with everything else you should be doing. In other words, that trial, we think it might have a somewhat of a favorable outcome, but nowhere near as favorable if they'd also been on rapamycin, a senolytic, replenished their NAD, behaved properly as far as lifestyle. In other words, metformin by itself may yield some benefits by itself, but we think in conjunction with all the other interventions that are now becoming available, you can have a meaningful impact on systemic aging.
And you are anticipating all my questions expertly. We're like a synchronized swimming team here, because you brought up another drug called rapamycin and a drug that's an oral tablet. It's available in pharmacies. It's been used in kidney transplant patients to keep their immune system from rejecting their kidney. But at a lower dose, it's a very hot prospect for anti-aging. So what's Life Extension's relationship with recommending rapamycin, and any comments?
Well, we've written about it for many, many years. We advocate people enter clinical trials. One of the problems with it is in the United States, it's very expensive. Even the generics are expensive. We're exploring offshore sources. But our caution with rapamycin is if you don't get the Rapimmune brand name, and we hate to recommend brand name products because they're just so expensive, there are some problems with generic rapamycin. And that's not the case with most other medications. But what we do is we measure people's blood levels of rapamycin after they ingest it. We're finding certain brands that people are trusting aren't yielding the kind of blood levels that we're looking for. The data on rapamycin is spectacular. Virtually every animal model it's been tested in, if not all, it's extended their lifespan. Even short-term use of rapamycin, an elderly person who's, let's say, does it for 3 months, once a week, by the way. The dose of rapamycin is just 6 to 10 milligrams once a week. That may confer significant longevity effects over the long term without them ever taking rapamycin again, which is amazing. Now, we're not saying people should stop, but there's at least data to support even short-term use of the rapamycin drug may meaningfully extend healthy longevity.
Right. And, you know, some of our listeners are sophisticated in understanding their molecular biology, and rapamycin is an inhibitor of mTOR. And mTOR is one of the main pathways of aging. So inhibiting mTOR periodically, theoretically, is a good idea. I listened to some of your lectures in the last year, and I enrolled to be in one of those randomized studies, the PEARL study. So because of you, I'm taking a tablet a week, and I don't know if it's the placebo, and I don't know if it's the active rapamycin. And I'm getting a lot of tests. It's first clinical trial I've ever been in, because it's for healthy people. It's an anti-aging longevity trial. And I'll be very curious at the end of a year if I got the placebo or the real drug, because there's no way I can really tell. And all the data is going back, of course, to the research center. So I thank you for sparking my interest. And a few of my patients also decided to enter the trial. So we're helping to move research ahead.
It's fantastic. We helped get that study up off the ground. We helped recruit for it. And we're grateful some people donated some nice money to get that going.
Yeah, that's really special that they did. Because, you know, it's still a major goal to prevent and reverse heart disease, type 2 diabetes, cancer. But if we can tackle aging, we know the statistics are that it's going to have a profound advancement to human health and well-being and joy and quality of life. At the present time, somebody's listening and say this CRISPR stuff, this Yamanaka stuff, this senolytic stuff, although senolytics, you could start at least vitamin support this week on a senolytic activator that I mentioned, lifeextension.com makes. Rapamycin, metformin, you're going to have to work with a longevity expert, Deprenil. I mean, give us another 1, 2, 3. Actually, I will start today kind of concepts. Are you a promoter of various fasting and calorie reduction for longevity?
Well, yes, if you engage in intermittent fasting, you suppress mTOR, which also induces beneficial autophagy. That's internal cellular housekeeping. And typical Americans today never clean the inside of their cells. They eat all the time. They never give the cells a chance to ignite the autophagy process. And then as a result, people get sick and die way too soon. So if you're unable to start rapamycin, but you can fast about 16 hours, most days you can drink some black coffee, green tea, black tea. Just don't put any sugar or protein in your body for about 16 hours. Most days you will induce some of the rapamycin benefits. But an interesting ancillary benefit of rapamycin is it reduces the error rate in protein synthesis that normally occurs with aging. And that may be a unique mechanism of rapamycin that we can't easily emulate other ways. So I can't wait for the study results to come out. We're already trying to push studies ahead with people using rapamycin once a week because we feel the mechanisms are going to induce some or significant benefits.
All right. And I just want to focus on one last topic. This is Reverse Heart Disease Naturally Summit. You've written a very widely quoted book, not very complimentary of the pharmaceutical industry. We do not have any pharmaceutical company sponsors of the summit. And, you know, we've had a very interesting last 3 years where we've talked about the pharmaceutical industry and their profits and their ethics as much or more than any other time. So without going down the pandemic road, give us, you know, a short synopsis of your concerns about the pharmaceutical industry and maybe one, you know, example in the last 5, 10, 20 years, you'd point out is just a disaster.
Well, I've written a number of books exposing the corruption and the incompetence that exists between Big Pharma and the FDA, They push out drugs that are sometimes more dangerous than what benefits they confer are. But I just want to say something that maybe you and your audience may not agree with. And that is, at this point in time, until CRISPR perfects the ability to lower dangerous lipids in the body, if people need to get on a drug like Repatha or a statin drug, based on my 45 consecutive years of watching people, looking at their blood test results, if they don't control these atherogenic risk factors and they live long enough, typically they'll start getting coronary artery occlusive type problems. This, unfortunately, is a natural phenomenon. Wish it wasn't, but typically you go back even many thousands of years and look at Egyptian mummies. They had atherosclerosis. They had the same kind of diseased arteries as we do today. But today we've got medications. They're dirty drugs. They have side effects. But a coronary artery occlusion, that's a rather nasty side effect. So I have to say that when we look at someone's blood test results and they're unable to achieve optimal levels of everything and also their blood pressure, if they can't get that down to an optimal range, please get on a medication, deal with some side effects, but don't let yourself be denied the virtue of some of the beneficial cardiovascular medications just because you don't like drug companies. And no one dislikes drug companies more than me. They tried to put me in jail, by the way. I went to the FDA and tried to shut down life extension. But I do recognize they make some decent drugs that act at least as a bridge between today and when CRISPR will be available to get rid of all the pharmaceuticals.
I actually think that is a powerful and unplanned statement you just made, particularly from somebody who's been a major critic of the pharmaceutical industry. I actually couldn't agree more. I have this reputation as a holistic or natural cardiologist, but I actually spent about half of my time trying to talk people into trusting me enough to write a low dose of a statin or a non-statin, or as you mentioned, some of the newer cholesterol drugs, because you don't want to die while you're waiting for, you know, some new therapy to come down the road. You got to protect your arteries now. This is a lethal disease. So I agree. And, you know, it's informed consent. People need to know the risks, the benefits, the alternatives, but ignoring heart disease can be a very, very dangerous mistake.
Well, we've seen it with too many people. They do everything right, but they maybe don't control their blood pressure. I've had supporters call me after having, let's say, an ischemic stroke, nothing serious, but they had it. And I said, wow, how did that happen? I'm assuming you kept your blood pressure low. And they'll say, well, no, I just thought if I did everything else right, I'd be okay. But with aging, blood pressure tends to elevate. And the antihypertensive medications like telmisartan, side effects, very rare. And it just normalizes blood pressure, or optimizes it, because normally for older people, blood pressure is too high. So again, recommendation for people, have an at-home blood pressure monitor. Monitor yourself a couple times a day to know if there are peaks, because it's the peaks of systolic elevation that inflicts the arterial damage. So if there's a certain time of the day you need to take that pill, take the pill that time of the day to drop your blood pressure down below 120.
I know you don't have an MD after your name, but I actually have this sense that I'm talking to myself right now. Telmisartan is my number one prescription for blood pressure when I can't achieve it through every other lifestyle approach, and there are many. And I beg people to have a home blood pressure cuff and use it regularly and use it three times in a row, relax. And I regularly post my blood pressure on social media, not to show off, because it's not always optimal. It usually is, but not always. But it's really to make the point, you're living blind if you don't know your numbers. And of course, lifeextension.com has a wonderful lab. You can get your labs done. You can get better labs done with lifeextension.com than you're going to get at most family doctors and internists. Like lipoprotein little a, like homocysteine, CoQ10 and omega-3 blood levels. God knows, how do you live without knowing those numbers? I can't remember practicing medicine without knowing those numbers now. Yeah,
absolutely shocking. We'll have people send in their blood labs for us to look at, which we're happy to help anyone. And they are so sparse. They have maybe 12 tests. And for the same amount of money, they could have put in an extra 10 or 20 tests that would have really yielded a lot clearer picture of that patient's condition.
As I say, you may take 50 vitamins a day. If I don't take 20 vials of blood from my patients, I'm not doing my job. About the numbers. Well, I'm going to say, be respectful of your time. You've given us this really powerful synopsis, and everybody's just going to have to go read about CRISPR gene editing, Yamanaka factors. I'll put those in the video notes, about senolytic agents and about some of these medications that are available now and could be consideration. So where can people find your foundation, and you know, what's a website to go to learn more?
Well, to deal with our Life Extension group or see what we're doing, lifeextension.com. And then if you're interested in going further than what Life Extension does, we have the Age Reversal Network, and that's age-reversal.net. And that gets you more into these experimental therapies, the rapamycin, Yamanaka type factors. So we have a group within our Life Extension Foundation that wants to go way beyond supplements. So we have that separate group, so we don't pester people with things that they may not be interested in. So age-reversal.net for information on trials in which they're trying to reverse aging, and then lifeextension.com for what you can do right now to keep yourself healthier, so you'll be living around the time when these technologies emerge, which may only be 5 to 10 years away.
And based on the latest, greatest data just published in cardiology journals this week, the kind of supplements you make are saving lives. It's not expensive urine. It is, you know, scientifically supported. So I think patients get bashed all the time by medical people for wasting money on vitamins. Yet the research is, it's life-saving. So you got to get with somebody that knows what they're talking about, but pick wisely and pick long-term. So thank you again. Have a wonderful, wonderful day. And many people are going to benefit from this conversation.
Tremendous, Dr. Khan. I appreciate it so much.